Okay, so number nine is eyeballing is not the whole story. There's something of a tradition in the FWBO for going for meeting up in pairs, whether that's going off for walks or going to the local cafe. And of course that's very good. If you have a cafe like the Wild Cherry or Earth Cafe or the Gallery Cafe, it keeps them in business. So, you know, it's certainly valuable. And, you know, I think it is clearly is valuable to spend time in that sort of way. But I do think it's important we don't think that's all there is to friendship, because sometimes you can get a bit of that sense that people think that is what it means to do friendship. And I think if our friendship is just limited to those meetings, well, we can miss quite important elements in what it means to really know another person. And it can even get in some ways a bit utilitarian. You know, have I had my friendship contact for the week, as it were? And also something that I have seen over the years is sometimes it can even get into something of a rut. You have the, you know, Monday lunchtime meeting with X, and you go for your lunch together. And yes, it can all just get a bit sort of low energy and not a sense of not really going anywhere and ultimately a bit meaningless. So clearly it's valuable to meet up in that way. But I think we have to watch out for the limitations of that as well. And I think that leads me on to point 10, which is that, well, if eyeballing is not the whole story, something that's much closer to the whole story is number 10, which is helping your friend. I think helping your friend is much nearer to what it means to be a friend than eyeballing them over for capture. So, clearly, I mean, almost shouldn't really need saying, should it, that we need to help our friends. If you don't help your friend, you can hardly be called a friend. So I think we need to be really on the lookout for any opportunities we get to help our friends, whether that's, you know, just simply washing and cleaning, if we're living together. And one of the things that sort of I was quite touched by recently was I'd come back a bit late and I was sort of downing my meal and then going off to iron my shirts for work the next day before I was going to the Mitra study group that I was leading that evening. And Saroja just kindly volunteered to do my ironing for me, and it was like, oh, it was just really nice, because people don't usually do my ironing, well, it was just that he saw that actually would make quite a difference, because it meant I could eat my meal slowly and not just be in such a frenetic state. So it was very much that thing of felt that he'd actually seen the situation was on, and saw how he could help me to make quite, you know, a difference to me at that point in time. Again, another day I came home and found that Kieran had mended my puncture of my bike, which again was like, oh, wow, sort of, it was just really nice to, to sort of see that without having been asked. When our friends are ill, we can do our best to look after them. We can, for example, drive them, to retreat. And I think the other thing is, we need also sometimes to ask for help as well. Some of us are rather shy at asking for help. But in a way, if we don't ask for help, then we stop our friends from being as much as a friend as perhaps they would like to be towards us. I was reminded of, I don't know if you know, the Spanish story, which is this guy, his car breaks down. It's the middle of the night, and he needs a spanner to change his wheel. And he looks around, it's like the middle of the night, what's he going to do? And then he notices off in the far distance there's a house with a light on, or at least a light outside. And so he sort of goes on, and as he's going along, he's thinking, oh, I don't know if I can ask this person. It just, you know, this is like 3 a.m. Can I really, you know, get somebody out of bed to, you know, to give me a spanner? And gets more and more worked up and anxious about it, and eventually comes to the door, rings a bell, gets more anxious. Guy comes down in his pyjamas, and the guy whose car's broken down says, I never wanted your spanner anyway. So I think it can be a bit like that, that we can decide beforehand the response that we're going to get to our request. And I must admit, I had a little experience of that. I thought it's a good joke, but I sort of had an experience of this only a few weeks ago, because I spent ages thinking about, can I ask my friends to get up at 4:30 in the morning to take me to a retreat, to take me to the airport? And I just spent ages thinking, oh, no, you could get a taxi, and no, your friends might like to do it, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, eventually I did, and Jan of Archer, who hates getting up in the morning, absolutely, very happily said, yes, I'll do that. So, you know, again, I was very close to not asking anyone to do that. But actually, he and someone else was, very happy to do it. And, it's those little things that sort of, I think, are the sort of like little wee building blocks of friendship in a way. And again, with money, we can, use money to help our friends. We can give things to our friends. It's lovely coming back from retreat. Certainly in my community, I think in quite a lot of communities, but you come back to a whole shower of flowers and cards and chocolates, and it's just lovely. You just feel, really welcomed when you get back, really sort of cared for. I was reminded of, when I think about this, of Al-Ghazali. He's an 11th century Islamic person who talks about the 3 degrees of friendship. And so the 3 degrees are, first of all, that you give to your friend from your surplus. Secondly, that you share equally what you've got with your friend. And thirdly, the highest degree is where you put your friend before yourself. You give to your friend before yourself. So I think that's very nice, inspiring sort of almost like path to move towards of progressive generosity, until one can eventually put one's friend before oneself.